Welcome to episode 54 of Yins Are Good, the podcast that shares and celebrates all of the good stuff going on out there and all of the good people who are making that good stuff happen. I am your host, Tressa Glover. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I hope you and yours are doing well. I can't wait to share this episode with you. I've been waiting patiently and excitedly waiting, I should say, since January to be able to bring this guest onto the show, Global Links. Okay, well, Global Links isn't the guest on the show. The technical guest on the show is Angela Garcia, the executive director of Global Links. But you know what I mean. Are you familiar? Global Links is a nonprofit founded and based right here in Pittsburgh that shares surplus from the U.S. healthcare system to support health programs globally and locally. I had the absolute pleasure of sitting down and chatting with Angela. And, well, actually, we didn't just sit. Oh, no. Angela also gave me a tour of their massive warehouse, and we took some video, which you will find on both our Yins Are Good Facebook page and our Instagram. So please do go over and check those out. I had such a great time. We had such a great time. And the scope of the work that Global Links is doing really is nothing less than inspiring, and well, you're about to hear all about it. Also known to be inspiring from time to time is my husband, Don DiGiulio, and he is returning for yet another Name That Neighborhood segment. What's going to happen there? We never know. And I do just want to mention that it's been a few weeks, dear listeners, since we've gotten a story from any of you. No pressure or anything. No pressure at all. But just a reminder, you know, that, well, that obviously you keep this show going by listening and by telling your friends about it and by commenting on our social media, and it's all awesome. But also, you do keep us going by, and I mean all of us, going by sharing your personal stories. You know, acts of kindness, moments of goodness and gratitude from your own lives. And we all do like a good story, don't we? Something that makes us smile, something that lifts us up, something that gives us chills, as I always say, or as always happens to me. So please, if you have something to share, please do talk to us, share with us. Send us an email to yinsaregood@gmail.com. And again, thank you for listening in. I know there's a lot going on in the world, in our country, and I'm so happy and honestly honored that you have tuned in and are taking a break for some good news. And so, I think we should get to it, should we not? Let's get to the good stuff. Angela Garcia of Global Links. I love it here, by the way. And we're going to talk so much more about it. If you could start us off with, what is the mission of Global Links?
Sure. So thanks for having me. It's great to have you here at my second home, yes. Be part of the Global Links family. So Global Links was founded here in Pittsburgh in 1989 by three amazing women with a mission to improve health for vulnerable communities. And we do that through a unique model of capturing or rescuing surplus from the healthcare sector and redistributing that to communities in need, both locally and globally. So we're part of that circular economy, as we call it nowadays. And we'll get into a lot more details. But To sum it up, we capture over 300 tons of materials every year that would have otherwise been discarded. And we use those in programs in partnership with the World Health Organization, health authorities in low-resource countries, nonprofits here in Western Pennsylvania, and really giving those materials a second life with a new owner.
I can't wrap my brain around 300 tons. Like, I can't, you know, I'm trying to think, how much is that? That just thinking about, if it weren't for you all, and right, and what, for Yins, so sorry, for Yins, you know, but that all, where would that be, or what would happen to it?
And that's exactly why Global Links was founded, because there are many international aid organizations, and the traditional model is working with manufacturers and distributors to, you know, partner with them and get surplus at the, you know, at the end of a sales cycle or at the end of an inventory year. And that's absolutely a wonderful model. But our founders had worked in clinical settings, and the idea was, well, what's available within the healthcare setting? And really focusing on hospitals for the first two decades of our history. And, you know, it's amazing. People say, why is there so much? Well, every single product in this facility, and if people want to get a sense of what 300 tons looks like, we have tours every month open to the public. People can go register virtual or in person. Or if you're driving out park, if you're local and you're here in Pittsburgh or visiting Pittsburgh, when you're driving out the parkway, look to your right and you'll see a very large white building, Global Link sign, big solar array on the roof, and it is 58,000 square feet. So I know I'm not a spatial person, but when you glance to the right and see how big the facility is, even without coming in, that is constant movement. And so why so much stuff? Yeah. Like, we have a real luxury. We have many luxuries in this country. Rebranding and remodeling, new construction, all of these things. Our doctor's office, you know, remodels, well, like old color scheme, exam tables and waiting room furnishings. Maybe that lovely orange from the 70s. Can you guys picture that burnt orange? That it wasn't mustard yellow. Yes. You know, but that's an aesthetic. Right.
Yeah.
Upgrading for new construction. You know, maybe there's a new wing in one of our hospitals, and that's oftentimes accompanied with new furnishings in public facing areas. Mm-hmm. So we as consumers sort of expect things to look more modern, but then there's also safety improvements. So being that we're in Pittsburgh, we have a very large population over 65. Many places do. Baby boomers are driving a lot of the changes. Well, we want our seniors to be as safe as possible. And so what many people may be familiar with and not even realize is modern beds in senior care and hospitals can actually go very low to the floor. They can move up and down. Well, that was a technological improvement. And the reason is for people that have a hard time getting out of bed to reduce the possibility of a fall.
Right.
Well, the beds that don't go low, what do you do with them? And so whenever those things are put into place, we work with a lot of senior care facilities so as to put those beds, you know, into the surplus recovery cycle rather than just discard them or recycle them. So those are just a couple reasons, but there are literally hundreds of reasons why surplus is generated. And it's not because they're being wasteful. It's because we are constantly improving technology, improving innovations, improving the healthcare environment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then there's all of us as consumers, right? So what do you do after your broken ankle heals and you don't need your crutches anymore? Or you have a family member who, you know, used a wheelchair, or you used a wheelchair to transport them around. Maybe their mobility was impaired, or there are numerous products we get either care at home or hospice care at home, or just, you know, like the injury.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you never use those crutches, even if you're like, I can still walk, they give it to you for a sprain.
Yeah.
They can't be returned. Unused.
We had crutches and we moved with them. Like, it was the same. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
They're in great condition,
yes,
right?
What
do you do with them?
But it's like, what do you do with these things? Well, and I was like, could I make a planter? Like, I was what if I laid it? Like, I didn't.
Anyway. Creative reuse is a wonderful thing.
Yes. It did not work, but yes.
But there is a huge home care, orthopedics, sports injuries, all types of reasons. end of life care, you know, families mm-hmm. that lose a loved one. What do you do with all those materials? Mm-hmm. You know, well, many of them can be donated to Global Links, and we have contact-free drop-off points and partners around Western Pennsylvania. Certain items, one program that we love dearly is called Breathe Hope, mm-hmm. and it's centered around a small air compressor machine called a nebulizer. And if you have breathing difficulties as a young child, maybe asthma, maybe some other things, or as a senior, it's very difficult to use a puffer or an inhaler. Yeah. So people are familiar with those inhalers. Well, mm-hmm. very young children and older adults sometimes cannot coordinate that. So they give them this little air compressor called a nebulizer, hooks up to a little mask and tubing, and it makes a mist of the medication and they breathe it indirectly. Mm-hmm. Well, if you know anyone that's had asthma or COPD, and if you've seen them, or if listeners have been through that themselves and seen someone in respiratory distress and gasping for breath, mm-hmm. to me, it's terrifying. And so we discovered that our international program team was coming back with photos, and there were moms carrying their young children into the local clinic. And we work in a lot of rural areas in Latin America and the Caribbean. And this was whatever country we would go to. And they were walking with their children in arms to wait in line at a clinic because they don't have the luxury of a nebulizer in each person's home. They have a nebulizer station for the community. And so at the same time, I had become a new mom. Mm. And my son was 2 months old when we made our first emergency trip to the local children's hospital because he was wheezing. I had no idea what to do. And it turns out we were sent home with a nebulizer. And so sort of those two things took a few years, but sort of percolating amongst the team here, why don't we ever see these machines? Oh, because they're not used in a hospital, which was where our focus was. And that's one of the things that helped us learn about home care. And so nebulizers through the Breathe Hope program, when my son was old enough to start using a puffer, inhaler, my grandmother had a bout with pneumonia. She was prescribed one. After she got over her pneumonia, she had fine lung capacity. She no longer needed it. My dad grew up in the Steel Valley. He has very, very compromised lungs from a lifetime of exposure. And so in my family alone, we had 3 nebulizers and only one person still needed to use it. So what do you do? Yeah. And that's when we started the Breathe Hope program. So people anywhere in the country can go to our website, download a pre-printed label, and donate this small couple pounds air compressor. And then donations we raise allow us to buy new masks and tubing and get those to families in Western Pennsylvania as well as around the world, because people should not have to wait 20 minutes times the number of people in front of them in line while their child is gasping for breath. And that's, again, that's what Global Links' mission is, connecting surplus. So looking for those opportunities and connecting it to improve health. And a lot of those are just gaps in the system, right? So we are here to fill the gaps in the system.
You have so many programs. You've already been talking about them, but so many programs domestically and internationally.
Yeah.
Can we just dive in and talk about some? Wherever you are.
Yeah, so our motto at Global Links is we were founded to work, and the focus was really in international programs. It didn't mean we had not wanted to work locally, but in 1989, we also didn't have that home care sector. It's part of the U.S. healthcare system. So it was really hospital surplus, and there's not a real match to clinics or nonprofits for that. So this was a lot of surgical supplies, a lot of surgical equipment, hospital beds, very large, and we still do that. Mm-hmm. So our international program works really focused on increasing both the capacity, but also the conditions and quality of care in resource limited communities. So we have programs in Honduras and Nicaragua and Bolivia and in Cuba, and we have projects in Haiti. And those are all in partnership because we can send materials, but what we really need is the staffing. There have to be the medical professionals there that are trained and know how to care for the community. And there has to be a building. And that is their responsibility to keep that building up and running. So we come in with that sort of, we can help equip the patient ward or the emergency room. So after 2 decades of, you know, really focusing and working with the World Health Organization as advisors in each country, that home care sort of sector was growing intentionally in the United States. It's mm-hmm. better for us as consumers if we can stay independent and healthy at home, get care at home, less risk of infection, all different reasons that mm-hmm. sometimes we don't all think about, but Global Links was thinking about them. And then we started to see that a lot of these materials are really a great match for some of our nonprofit colleagues. And so we, of course, started in our hometown of Pittsburgh and reached out to free and charitable clinics, to a local chapter of the Red Cross and other disaster responders, and then other nonprofits that were caring for. They were the direct either case managers or clinicians for our lowest income neighbors in Western Pennsylvania. And so our local program now is mirrored on our international. It's about building partnerships. We are not the clinicians or caregivers, but we have a really good knack for identifying viable surplus that's exists in, you know, some settings or some households, but others, for example, if you are on SNAP benefits or food stamps, many of us know, if you qualify for that program, you're at a certain income threshold. It's very low, but those benefits do not cover personal health and hygiene items like soap and toothpaste and toothbrushes. And there's other items like baby diapers and adult incontinence products. Depends. 40% of us, we will end up managing incontinence after age 50. It's just a fact of life, folks. It's nothing to be ashamed about. 40%. But 40% of us, muscles get tired. Yep. It is what it is. But here's the thing. If we have the means, we go out and buy our discreet products mm-hmm. and we go about living and no one needs to know.
Right.
For low income, we're forced to live with a lot of indignity, a lot of risk for infection. And that means people often self-isolate. And it can affect their mental health as much as their physical health. So for the lack of products that we don't really think about, but that aren't covered, our lowest income neighbors are often suffering in silence, and that affects their physical and their mental health. So that's how our domestic program came about. And then when the pandemic started, we just put ourselves forward to the community, both the foundation community and the corporate community, and said, we can be here. We can be here for all of the nonprofit community. We know how to manage medical inventory. We know what PPE is before people knew what PPE was, that personal protective equipment. We were very familiar because we've worked in disasters all around the world for 30 years. And so we went from having 30 nonprofit partners to providing everything from the masks and the hand sanitizer and the disinfectant and then other medical supplies. Over the past 2 years, we ended up working to support over 1,200 nonprofits here in Western Pennsylvania to help them.
Oh my, okay. Well, the just here, so 1,200 here.
1,200 here. I mean, we have a very large nonprofit community here in Western Pennsylvania, and we have a very generous foundation community and concerned corporate partners and bringing that all together. But we raised the financial support and really acted as the supply chain for starting with the free and charitable clinics. All the shelters, the women's shelters, domestic violence shelters, vet shelters, homeless shelters, senior care, you know, nonprofit senior care organizations, mm-hmm. and then our low-income senior high-rises. You know, so if you think back to the 2 years ago, these were folks that couldn't necessarily get out or didn't have the dollars to, and then it moved into childcare. We were all, you know, helping to get the childcare sector back open so people could go back to work. And then there was all of our immigrant and refugee neighbors. Things in the first few months weren't even communicated well in other languages. So yeah, it was an amazing past 2 years. We've made so many new friends, and we have partnerships in Erie County and Mercer County. So counties outside of our home base, but that's really, you know, Western Pennsylvania, we're proud to be their neighbor and really build these things from here out. Cause you know, we're proud Pittsburghers.
Yeah.
We are. We like building things better for the future. Yeah, exactly. And there's, you know, we know we're very aware of the inequities in the system. So anything we can do to improve primary care, maternal care, helping, you know, pregnant women. Again, it's that experience from international really helped. So we act as the point of contact for people that have stuff, right? Mm-hmm. We have what do we do with this home care materials or a physician's practice? You know, maybe you know folks that are retiring, they're closing down their practice.
Yeah.
We are the experts in going and getting the materials. We then build partnerships with local nonprofits who are serving veterans who are serving women and children. And, you know, so if people don't know where to go to get something, we'll refer them to a partner. You know, we have great partners that provide diapers for babies and, you know, mm-hmm. single parents. So working with the diaper bank, they're the ones going to provide the materials. We're supporting them. So any of those things, whenever we do formalize a partnership, oftentimes we'll, you know, be sharing those resources on our website as well.
And the website is?
globallinks.org. So just global, G-L-O-B-A-L, I say sometimes, L-I-N-K-S. So there's two L's in the middle and S on the end. And that is updated weekly. We are very much about educating our, you know, community mm-hmm. on the resources. If we don't know a resource or if it's not listed there, we will try to find those. And there really are such amazing nonprofits doing great work for so many members of our society. So we feel one part of our mission is to lift them up, right? Their mm-hmm. their job and our yeah. job, if we're working to improve the health of the community, is to collaborate. So mm-hmm. Anytime we can connect folks, we do. If you're thinking you may have stuff or your, you know, family members have stuff, what do you do with that, you know, wheelchair from XYZ? It's on the website, but you can also call our general line. They will tell you where contact-free drop-off points are. They do have to be dropped off. We do not have a residential pickup service. But if it's a facility, like I said, private practice, or we work with universities and private companies mm-hmm. and senior care facilities, they can call and request sort of an assessment by our surplus program management team. And they will meet at the facility, do a site visit, do a walkthrough, and really help them and, you know, identify what can be donated for reuse. And then if it's, you know, you want to get involved in a totally different way, maybe you don't have materials, but we have an amazing volunteer program. So all of this stuff that comes in the building, someone needs to check the expiration dates and count it and repackage it. And working under our trained staff, we literally host volunteers from all walks of life, all ages and abilities, corporate groups, faith-based groups, civic groups, families, individuals, students, you name it, mm-hmm. retirees looking to spend 2 hours, you know, connecting our region surplus to saving and improving lives. It's a 2-hour shift. Also can be on our website. You sign up there. But we have a volunteer program that runs 5 days a week. It literally hundreds of Pittsburghers every year can be part of, I say it's part of the magic, right?
Yep.
No prior experience necessary. If you can count or group like items, we have very, you know, active sessions. We have packing, very detail-oriented sessions, and our team does a great job at matching people's interests and mm-hmm. skills. We have very specialized volunteers that work on only wheelchairs. We affectionately call them our wheelchair wranglers. And so these are people that like to use tools and, you know, nuts and bolts and screws and parts. Mm-hmm. And if you like to work on a bike, that's what I've been told is a good analogy. You would love to work in our wheelchair workshop. And so there's lots of different things. One-time visit. We do a lot of companies that are doing team building. Since people are moving away from in-person offices right. as they're getting together, we will combine a service learning project hands-on. We have a meeting room. So we have someone dedicated just to working with corporations and building that experience. So we say it's a better investment than, you know, maybe going out and just having a meal together. Why not have a meal? We'll provide a list of local restaurants. They can support the local economy and use our community room and be a part of this unique nonprofit and connecting our region surplus.
It's such a good idea.
Hey, you know. And if people are looking to learn more about Global Links, you know, like I said, they can sign up for a tour, virtual, in person. They can request a speaker. We regularly have staff that speak to groups off-site in the Pittsburgh area, virtual speakers for schools, et cetera. Mm-hmm. There's lots of students who look for service projects.
Yes.
We have a program manager dedicated to doing that, social media projects, you name it. There's lots of ways to get involved, but just visit our website.
Global Links, two L's and an S.
.org. Yeah, or call us and send an email, you name it, and we would love to talk more. So we're always open and discussing with the community. We feel everybody has a, you know, can play a role mm-hmm. in this unique model because it doesn't exist in every city. It should, but there's a lot of detail work that goes into it to do it well. Because our goal was to make sure we get the right materials to the folks that can use them at the right time they can use them. And that's where the staff work comes in, really matching that up, managing those relationships. So
are there any, you know, speaking of connecting with, you know, the right things to the right people at the right time, and this might be a big question, but are there any stories or moments or interactions that you've had? I mean, okay, I should say, I'm sure there are, are there any that you would like to share?
There are so many. And, you know, I chuckle because I've been here with Global Links since 2000. I've been the executive director since 2018. And so during that 20-year span, I've had the opportunity to work in different aspects of our organization. I definitely have a couple favorite stories, and I just try to pick them from, you know, every year we look back on our year through photos and what resonated with each of us. We do that as a team. So I've mentioned wheelchairs. So there's a photo we received. We always request feedback from our partners, you know, did everything they received, did it meet the needs of the community? Was there anything that didn't? We received a photo of this gentleman. He's 100 years old in Central America, just thin and frail, but with this smile, and three of his family members standing in front of a very small, primitive home. It was a very rural community. It was very dark, and they are smiling. And to get four folks with this just beaming smile, and I'm like, what's the... Well, it turns out he had been bedridden because of his lack of mobility for years, and it was for lack of a wheelchair. And so they were on the receiving of part of their community's wheelchair allotment from Global Links, and he wrote to us to say that just being able to feel the sun again completely changed his life. I'm like, okay, tear falling right now. Because can you imagine not being able to go out because of lack of something as simple as a wheelchair? That one really, But we do a lot with maternal health and helping to improve conditions for women having children, because no matter where we work, locally or globally, one of the riskiest parts of a woman's life is childbirth. And unfortunately, more women die in childbirth and childbirth-related causes around the world than any disease. So many countries where we're working, that's one of the first things we discuss is, you know, what is their maternal mortality rate, the number of women dying per live births. And we were asked, it's about 8 years ago, by the World Health Organization to talk with the health authorities, the public health authorities in Nicaragua, because they were aware of how high their maternal death rate was. And they were moving forward with a model, because it's very rural, and the poorest health outcomes are for generally indigenous women and Afro-Caribbean descent women. These are most often the most isolated communities. So it is definitely a form of racism and disparity. And when they looked at where women were dying, it was more in these rural communities. So what they proposed was this model called maternity homes. So that they would build basically a small dorm home with a exam room, a doctor's office in the dorm near the hospital, so that women could come from rural communities where they may have to travel 2 to 6 hours by, and we've seen it all, by foot, public transportation, boat, or horseback. They could come before they were in labor, up to 2 weeks before their due date. And reason being, exactly, because, more likely they would come pre-labor than once labor started. And they could bring one female companion, whether it be their midwife, because there's a lot of trust in the traditional midwives, a family member, or even one other child. And so they were building these maternity homes, but to actually get the beds and the exam room and the blood pressure units that you need to monitor for preeclampsia, one of the causes of maternal death, you can't detect it if you can't monitor their blood pressure. They needed a partner. So they brought us in. We were able to equip over 100 of these maternity homes, and That's a lot of detail, but here's the story. So I was traveling a couple of years ago to visit these maternal homes and see how the partnership was working. And we were walking through with our partners at the Ministry of Health. And obviously most women are in their final stages of pregnancy and they're on the rockers and they're looking a little uncomfortable. And I'm like, you go, you got this. Hospital's next door in case of any complications. But then I see there's a woman with a child, obviously not newborn that day. And I asked our partners, and they said, well, we allow women who have to have an emergency C-section to stay at the maternal home for up to 2 weeks till their incision heals so that they don't go back. And then if there's an infection, that could also contribute to maternal death. So I'm like, I got to go talk to this woman. And she's just lying on one of the beds, so blissful and like over the moon, content, which was in juxtaposition to all these women who are like, okay, you know, and I'm feeling their pain, but I'm like, I got to go. And so I went over and I asked her, I was like, congratulations, you know, how'd things go? And she said, wonderful. And I said, have you ever been to the maternity home before? She said, no, this is my first time. I said, is this your first child? And she said, this is my fifth pregnancy, but this is my first live birth. So for whatever reason, that woman was not able to birth, you know, naturally in her village, but she needed help. And when you need a C-section in a low resource country, it's not elective. It's not a choice. It's either life of mother or baby. So her fifth time, she did make it to the maternal home. She had heard about it through other women in the community. And so she was able to have a healthy baby boy. And that one just,
Oh my gosh.
So I could tell stories, and anyone that wants to know more of our stories, I say there's so many for lack of some, what we consider simple and basic things. People's lives are impaired or lost due to things that can be prevented. It's very difficult for clinicians who are trained to do their jobs when they don't have the tools to do them. So that is what, you know, Global Links really focuses on, is what is the most common supplies and tools that we can provide. Again, to partners who are trained to do their job and who care for the most vulnerable members of their community, whether that's in South America, in Africa, in Pittsburgh, the model's the same. And that's why, you know, what we were founded on is dignity and respect for all people, because we believe health is a human right, respect for our environment, and continuous learning and improvement. And we are learning every single day about ways that we can do more, do better, make more partnerships, really transparent communication sharing, because we can't do this alone. It really does take a village, I think, to make any systemic change and to make it work and be sustainable. We don't own, you know, these projects. We respond to the community's requests. We offer resources, and then we work in tandem. That's sort of how we keep going 33 years later.
It's incredible, but also just so inspiring. I know the first time I was here a few months ago, just to meet you and talking with you again, it's just, my face hurts just from smiling and being just so appreciative of what you do. But it's just such a lesson in what's possible.
It is. And everyone that works with me know I'm an eternal optimist, right? We are living in such a tough world. I am parenting teenagers and trying to, you know, raise good global citizens. And it is tough. And some days there's just too much. There's too many disparities. There are too many people that, you know, are not getting a fair shot, right? And I've lived around the world, so I've had the luxury of seeing a lot of differences and different perspectives. And we try to, you know, build that into the Global Links culture, that the diversity of perspectives and lived experience and education and, you know, first language, place of birth, you name it, all of that is built into continually, you know, opening our eyes to how we can do more to meet our mission. And that mission has not changed since 1989. We all have a right to health, and there's so much more we can do. We are so fortunate in the United States. Just, you know, some days it doesn't feel like it, but the amount of resources we have here. Yeah. And if nothing else, learning about this, you know, I did not you know, start Global Links, but I was very fortunate to find it when I boomeranged back to Pittsburgh. Was not planning on staying here, but really growing with this organization kept me here. And I do, I'm very proud that we should all, as Pittsburghers, you know, be proud to raise Global Links as one of our hometown brands. You know, this 1989 moving forward and really taking this unique approach that just dovetails with our U.S. healthcare system, but allows us to share those resources to improve health, manage resources, respond to disasters and daily disasters. And just so much, it's really about sharing that. I consider it my honor to have the job to really share the message and let more people know about it. Please, doors are open. Stop by. People, you know, when you go out the parkway and you see it, everyone should know what Global Links does and be proud that we have it here in Pittsburgh.
I completely agree. Like, literally, and you can probably hear the trucks as we've been talking, but the parkway is right there. The number of people.
We impact over 1 million lives a year. Over 1 million every year.
Sorry, my jaw's dropped right now.
Bang. That was what it was. That was the sound.
That was the sound.
And that is through both a direct donation, like the gentleman whose one direct life is impacted through that wheelchair, or we work with a lot of indigenous communities in South America. So it may be a community of 20,000, 30,000 people who have a building, a small hospital, a clinic, but not a lot in that building. And so after we partner with them, work with them and equip it and furnish it and supply it, it's a whole different place. It's a resource for the whole community to now get access to healthcare and health resources because they can't travel. These are very remote communities. And that's where we've always found our calling. So we're trying to build a thriving community, bring back thriving communities and connectedness. And we can do that through supporting health.
Thank you for everything you do.
It's truly an honor. It's my vocation. Our team here is very passionate. Yeah. We really try to share that message, share the stories, because it's not necessarily, you know, a common occurrence to have a surplus rescue and humanitarian aid and disaster response organization under one roof and in our backyard.
Yes, that's the thing. It's all right here.
Pittsburgh, be proud of Global Links.
Yes.
Be proud of these three women who came up with this idea in 1989. Yes. I've had the honor of I've had the honor of meeting all of them, working with one of them for many, many years. And they were all about sustainability before we used the term sustainability. They were all about health for all before, you know, public health became the term that we now know. It is very important, but putting women and children's health at the center of our care, because women are the center of a community, education, so much. So really bringing that together, it's not about the stuff. It's not about the stuff you see in here. There's a lot of stuff. It's about relationships and building partnerships and involving community and transforming lives.
Hello there, Don.
Hi there, Tressa.
Welcome to Name That Neighborhood. How are you today?
Super duper. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you very much.
Good.
Thank you for asking.
Absolutely.
So we're here, episode 54.
Yeah.
And I do, I mean, right off the top here, I want to give a shout out to a Name That Neighborhood super fan, if I may say that. I don't really know what the actual definition of super fan is, but I feel like she would be one.
I didn't know there was a fan yet.
Oh,
a super fan. So this is news.
Do you listen to the show?
No, I'm glad that there.
Do
are people
you
that
pay attention enjoy, to the feedback?
The feedback, yeah.
Oh, audience, I need a minute. yes, and so.
No, don't we want to just say every fan of Name That Neighborhood is super?
That's pretty good, Don.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Trying to turn that around.
This one's extra super.
Yes, she is. She's Christine. Yeah. And in particular, Christine's a big fan of Don DeJulio. And
the heck you say.
It's true. It is true. To the point where she actually ended up requesting an autographed Yins Are Good button.
That you did, Tress.
Yeah.
That you did. My first.
Sure did. Your first.
Yeah, my first autograph button.
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal. It's major. I have one fan. So yeah. Thank you, Christine. Yeah.
And no, I and listeners, I think I've mentioned it before about Yagswag. We do have buttons. We have some magnets. You wouldn't know that, of course, because I haven't mentioned it before specifically. I'm very good at marketing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so coming soon, check out if you haven't yet been to our website, yinsaregood.com. Or our Instagram, our Facebook, about ways that you can get your hands on some of our merch. Just the word merch. I don't know. I don't think it comes flowingly out of my mouth. I feel.
Merch.
It
does not flow.
It does not
out
for
of
me.
Your mouth in particular.
It does not. Yag but thank you, does. Christine. Yagswag. Yeah.
Thanks, Christine.
Don.
Tressa.
We shall delay no further.
Without further ado.
Your choices of neighborhood.
Yes, please.
Green Tree.
Okay.
Or Sharpsburg.
Mm.
Oh.
All right.
All right. And you're going to be so happy.
For four.
There's only four
oh.
statements of fact.
The day is good.
It is.
Episode 54 is good. Good for me.
Oh, no. Okay. Let's get to it, shall we?
Yep.
Number one. In the early 20th century, the Wabash-Pittsburgh Terminal Railroad, which included the Wabash Tunnel, built a station in this neighborhood, causing the neighborhood to grow substantially.
Green Tree.
Woohoo! I felt a confidence from you on yes. that one. Yes, Green Tree. So the station was called Rook Station. And there's actually a little neighborhood there in Green Tree called Rook. There's also a Rook Yard, which is located near the western portal of the Green Tree Tunnel. This Rook Yard, okay. The yard was built there because the Wabash Line had a grand terminal building and elevated tracks, which stretched river to river, right, across Pittsburgh's triangle. Mm-hmm. But the line was dead-ended, so trains were backed into downtown as they had nowhere to turn around. Mm. So Rook Yard was built, where it is, about 5 miles west of downtown, to allow for the switching, makeup, and storage needed to service the downtown terminal. And
kind of like a railroad three-point turn. Or sitch without like the that. Turn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that. The town, the station, the yard were all named for Charles Alexander Rook, a publisher and owner of the Pittsburgh Dispatch newspaper. Huh. He offered his support to the Wabash Railroad interests and helped the company overcome the obstacles presented by the Pennsylvania Railroad and Baltimore and Ohio Railroad, which did not want the Wabash to enter Pittsburgh.
Mm.
Yeah.
I believe there was a very famous Wabash train. There was songs were written about the Wabash Cannonball. You heard of this?
I haven't heard of this.
Just listen to the jingle, the rumble, and the roar of the mighty locomotive as it speeds along the shore. And the Western combination is known to one and all. And I think I got the words wrong. It's the Wabash Cannonball.
Yeah. Oh my, ton.
You have to look it up. I did mess up the words.
That's okay.
It's a folk song. I remember from grade
love
school.
Love that. Listeners, what a bonus we all just got.
Yeah.
That was fabulous.
Mm.
Well, you know, I'll be Googling for our next show.
Yeah.
Hey, let's go on, number two.
Yeah.
The H.J. Hines Company got its start in this neighborhood, the hometown of its founder, Henry John Hines.
Sharpsburg.
You are quick on these two today so far. Woohoo! Mm-hmm. It is Sharpsburg. So, Henry John Hines was a native of Sharpsburg, and from a very young age, he showed signs of being quite the businessman.
Mm.
For example, He helped his mom sell excess produce from the family garden. And at just 14 years old, he assumed the role of assistant manager at his father's brickyard. And as an adult, it was Howard's house that served as the original Heinz glass factory. And that's where he first created and bottled horseradish. Now, of course, the company did eventually build an actual factory, which was the Heinz Glassworks factory. And it manufactured all the glassware for Heinz between 1885 and 1910. That, too, was in Sharpsburg. And as with the rest of its merchandise, the H.J. Heinz Company was very particular about having the finest and cleanest glass bottles for its products. The company's factory produced bottles hand-blown from molds in a variety of shapes and sizes. And, incidentally, if you didn't know, but perhaps you do, using glass bottles was a big deal at this time because early processed foods didn't always contain pure ingredients. For example, much of the ketchup on the market at the time contained coal tar.
No, thank you.
Coal tar.
Yuck. I have no more to say about that.
Heinz knew this, and so he made purity and quality a high priority. He made his ketchup with ripe tomatoes and spices, including cloves, cinnamon, and cayenne. And the company used clear bottles so the ingredients could be clearly seen by the customers so they knew what they were getting.
Literal transparency.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Well played. There you have it.
Yeah. The art of blowing glass is fascinating to me, by the way. Just throwing that out there.
Yep, I totally agree with that. Number three, let's keep rolling.
Sure.
From 1906 through 1957, Fort Pitt Brewing Company made this neighborhood its home, even staying open through Prohibition.
Green Tree.
Oh no. Oh no.
It's okay.
It is okay. It is Sharpsburg.
Okay.
So, Fort Pitt Brewing Company was founded, as I said, 1906, and its address is 315 15th Street there in Sharpsburg. And there, so Fort, the beer they made had a distribution network that went through Western PA, Eastern Ohio, West Virginia, and Maryland. Now, speaking of Prohibition, so of course, when that started in 1920, as you would think, it caused the vast majority of breweries to close, but Fort Pitt Brewing, they remained open and successfully so by selling a wide variety of non-alcoholic cereal beverages in 27 states from Massachusetts to California. And then after Prohibition, part of what made their sales increase was because of the introduction of steel cans into the marketplace. Fort Pitt Brewing also played an increasingly larger role through point of sales signs in bars, supermarkets, liquor stores, billboards, newspapers, and then even into commercials. And in fact, the 1935 U.S. Open Golf Championship that was held at Oakmont Country Club.
Yes.
Fort Pitt printed the admission cards using its logo on each ticket. This is, you know, a newer thing going on, right?
Sure. Advertising does pay off, it seems.
And they once produced 450,000 barrels of beer a year. They were the number one beer seller in Pittsburgh and also in the entire state for most of the 1940s. They voted to change their name to Fort Pitt Industries, Inc. This was in 1956. After deciding to expand its business to manufacturing overcoats. It made me giggle. I don't know why, because it's just such, what a departure.
Sure.
It seems. And I actually found what was written, I don't know what paper it was, but from Wednesday, October 17th, 1956. A little blurb that says, Fort Pitt name change. Fort Pitt Brewing Company plans to change its name and borrow $10 million. The name will be changed to Fort Pitt Industries, Inc., subject to stockholders' approval at a meeting on October 17th. The money will be used in the firm's new diversification program. The company recently acquired two overcoat manufacturing firms.
Who doesn't like a good overcoat?
Right? And I should say, I know I mentioned the address before. Well, the building has returned to its brewing roots, Don. Hitchhiker Brewing Company.
Yeah.
Hitchhiker, they are now there. Well, they've been there since 2017. Mm. So now it's back to what it was.
Nice.
Yeah. It's our last one, Don.
Yay!
Number four. This neighborhood's nature center boasts more than 18 acres of unspoiled land, complete with a natural spring and stream and several footpaths and trails.
Green tree.
You were ready for that one.
Yeah, a lot of green.
Yes, it is. So nestled in the middle of Green Tree, the Green Tree Nature Center was once owned by Dr. J. I just wanted to stop there.
Dr. J.
Because that'd be fun.
That would be fun.
Dr. J. Clifford and Marguerite Murdoch. Marguerite cultivated the land and planted in it every kind of tree that was native to Pennsylvania.
Hmm.
I love that.
I do too.
I think that's really cool. And then they sold their 11.5 acres to the Keystone Oaks School District in 1961 with the understanding that the school district would be responsible for its upkeep. Green Tree Borough then bought it from the school district in 1970 and added another 6.5 acres. That's where we get the 18. That was some quick math I just did there.
You are fast. You didn't even need the abacus.
I didn't this time. In addition to the native trees, as I mentioned, there are many different ferns, May apples, wild strawberries, and several types of ivy. The center also has an abundant supply of the jewel plant, also known as waterweed or touch me nots.
Oh,
I know, that's a thing.
Thanks.
We get it. I understand.
Very clear.
I understand. And then also some animals roaming through you might not expect in that suburban setting, because though it is 18 acres, you know, it's their houses and there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. Ringneck pheasants, wild turkeys, salamanders, and owls.
Ooh. Hootie hoo.
No. Oh, goodness. Wow.
Hootie and the Salamanders.
Hootie and the Salamanders.
Yes. Well known failed name at the beginning.
Don. 3 for 4.
That ain't bad.
It is not bad at all. And I thank you, as always, for your time.
Yeah. I return it with a you're welcome for my time.
And on that note, we will be bringing episode 54 to a close. I am your host, Tressa Glover. Huge thank you to Angela Garcia and to all the folks at Global Links. Listeners, please do be sure to check out our show notes for all of their info. And don't forget about those video clips from our tour of their warehouse. You can find those on our Facebook and Instagram pages. And until next time, my friends, be safe, be kind, be good. Special thanks to Christine Statzer, Don DiGiulio, and as always for our fabulous artwork, Mike Rubino.